In our continuing series of Tales of the Baal Shem Tov, we come now to the conclusion, the fourth installment, the fourth and final installment of the story called The Loan. You'll recall that this is a tale about a host of the Baal Shem Tov, a wealthy merchant whose name was Reb Zev, who was known by all for his kindness and benevolence, who once had appear at his doorstep an anonymous count who asked him for a loan of 500 ruble, a very, very considerable amount of money at that time, without disclosing who he was or how he was going to pay or where he hailed from. The count made a favorable impression on Reb Zev, but Reb Zev was not sure whether to lend him the money. Reb Zev went to the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov advised him to loan him the money, and indeed, this is what Reb Zev did. The count only signed a piece of paper with the amount of money, had never really returned the money. Afterwards, years went by, Reb Zev grew wealthier, forgot totally about the incident. Then an unfortunate turn of events came about where a blood libel was brought on the Jewish community and the area where Reb Zev lived, and it was decreed that all the Jews would have to leave within a half a year. The Jews were fasting and praying and saying Tilim to Hashem, and the community where Reb Zev was sent Reb Zev as a shaliach, an emissary to the Baal Shem Tov, to ask the Baal Shem Tov's etza and brocha, the Baal Shem Tov's advice and blessing. The Baal Shem Tov told Reb Zev that he should, strange as it sounds, go directly to Rome, to the Pope, and see to avert the decree at its source. This was something which was very, very dangerous, because Jews were not even allowed within the environs of Rome, surely not in Rome, surely not in the Vatican. And nevertheless, Reb Zev, confident in the mission that was given to him by the Baal Shem Tov, after garbing himself in Gentile clothing so that he should not be recognized as a Jew and not be killed before he even came into Rome, embarked on this dangerous journey. As he was about to enter Rome, he was attacked by a horde of peasants that wanted to tear him limb from limb. A count intervened who said to them that the pleasure of killing a Jew belongs to him. The count took Reb Zev in to his chambers and revealed himself before Reb Zev as none other than the very same count who had been loaned the money by Reb Zev so graciously so many years ago, and he repaid him the money, of course, and said to him, I'd like to help you in your task of saving the Jewish people, instructed Reb Zev how to appear before the Pope, how to give flowery words and phrases which would get the Pope's natural sense of grandeur peaked. Reb Zev appeared before the Pope together with the Count. Reb Zev begs for mercy from the Pope. The Pope says that his hands are tied because the testimony had been received and it went through the various channels from local to national to the Bishop Council to the Council of Cardinals, and they all had signed upon it, and they finally said, the only thing that I can do for you is to have read from the history of various such accounts before where accusations were made against the Jews, and in some times it was proven to be false, and if I should happen to come upon a story at random, which I will read for everybody, and it was shown in that story that the Jews were innocent, then I will see to it that it's declared that the Jews are innocent here as well. Otherwise, their fate is sealed. There's nothing that I can do about it. Reb Zev had no other recourse but to accept this capricious decision, and the Pope assembles the College of Cardinals. The tomes are brought out. The Pope takes out one at random and begins recounting a story of two Jewish tailors who moved to Rome because of their excellence in their ability and excellence to fashion clothing for the nobility. They befriend an elderly nobleman who shows them a secret chamber in his house which had within it plunder, Jewish plunder, which they decide to bid on after the nobleman's death, to bid on the palace so they could distribute the plunder to Tzedakah. They succeed in their bid because they know of the precious gems that are there and no price was too high. They begin distributing tzedakah and give two precious diamonds to the Pope for protection against the ire of the anti-Semites who couldn't take it that the Jew had outbid them and the Jews had outbid them. They're living in this magnificent palace. And the anti-Semites plotted time and time again what they could do to bring about the downfall of these two fine, honest, and upstanding Jewish tailors. And they finally hit upon a plan where they robbed a grave, hid the body in the catacombs of the palace, spread a rumor that a Gentile was killed, and that the Jews, these two tailors, were the ones responsible for the murder. They came, they found the body, a trial was arranged, half a year of trial goes on, and finally, the end of the trial is that in 2 days, the Jews are to be hung until they are dead. And so we find ourselves at the time where the two brothers are in jail with 2 days to live, praying and weeping to Hashem to save them from their plight, especially that since they had only purchased the palace in order to use the wealth to give it the money to Tzedakah for their unfortunate brethren all over the world. One of the brothers finally falls into an exhausted sleep where he has a dream that an old man comes to comfort him and says, not to worry, continue to trust in Hashem. Hashem has heard your prayers and you will be saved from the unjust death that awaits you. When the brother woke up, he told his other brother about this magnificent dream that he had, and he says to him, hopefully this is a good sign that we will be saved from this terrible situation, and although things seem hopeless, this dream is something that gives me mut, gives me courage, and gives me faith and hope. And he tried to strengthen his fellow brother as well, that things will turn out for the best. However, the day passed and there was no change. The final night came before the day of the hanging, and with it a troubled sleep for the brothers. One of the brother that had the original dream, again dreamed about the old man. This time, the dream was more explicit. And within the dream, the old man gave the brother instructions what to do. In the dream, he says to him, do as I tell you. When you wake up, go to your cell door. You will find it unlocked. And moreover, the main gate will also be unlocked. You will find a saddled horse waiting for you. Climb up the horse, let the horse have free rein, and go wherever it will take you. And it will take you to a small house. When you come to the house, get off the horse, enter the house. You will meet someone who will give you further instructions. Shaken by this dream, the tailor awoke all excited. It felt as if the old man was at his very side, speaking to him right now. So clear was the dream. And following the instructions of the dream, the tailor took some hesitant steps towards the door and found it open, as the old man had promised him in his cholam, in his dream. Stealthily he crept forward along the dark and dank and narrow passage and found everything just as the old man had said. The front gate of the prison was open. Before the prison was a horse, which he mounted and let ride free, and he rode until he reached a tiny cottage. He entered the cottage as instructed, and his eyes fell upon an old man seated in front of a large gemara. When the man saw his visitor, the old man's face lit up and said to the tailor, "You have nothing to fear from your persecutors. Your help from Hashem is close, and you will not only be saved, but you will see Hashem's revenge upon your enemies. Go back to your prison cell, wake up your brother, encourage him, tell him that Hashem has heard your prayer and his prayer, and he will save you from this fate." The tailor left the house, remounted the horse, which took him back to the jail. Quickly he went back to the prison cell, entering it on tiptoe so as not to arouse any of the sleeping guards. Coming into the cell, he found his brother still sleeping and had pity on him, deciding to wait until his brother awoke. He didn't have the heart to awaken him. Just as he was about to fall asleep himself, his brother woke up with a sob. As he is sobbing, his brother started to comfort him and said, "Stop your weeping." And he told him about the adventures that he had just had that followed the second dream. "Oh, how lucky you are that you are able to think such thoughts and have such dreams. I cannot believe that as our hour of doom approaches, that this is really going to happen. I have not seen any signs." "But I'm speaking the truth," the first brother insisted. "Go, test yourself, see if the cell door is not open. That will surely be a sign that I'm talking the truth, because you know that the cell door is always locked." The doubtful tailor hesitated and then approached the door. To his amazement, he found it unlocked, and a ray of hope began to flicker in his heart as well. And the two tailors began to pray with even renewed more kavana, and truly hoping that at this final moment they might yet be saved from their fate. They continued davening and davening throughout the night, and soon the time of the hanging arrived. They could hear the traffic of the hordes of people coming to witness the spectacle, how the two Jews would be hung for their killing a Christian. The government of the city had invited many high-ranking officials and men of note from many areas to see and witness the execution of the two Jews. However, the brothers, both knowing of the signs and the dreams, felt a renewed confidence, and when a burly policeman entered their cell to ask them their last requests, they said, "Please give us some l'chaim, and we'd like to visit with our families." When they had the l'chaim brought to them, they raised their glasses high in the toast, and they said, "L'chaim, l'chaim, may we come together with each other at times of happiness and rejoicing." and they said, may we come together at the times of Asimches, of our Kinderlach and Einiklach, of children and grandchildren. The wives, the distraught wives of the condemned men, were brought in for a brief last visit. When they saw that their husbands were so joyful and sure that they would be saved, and they were told about the wondrous events that happened, they too were reassured that Hashem would perform a nes and would save them, their husbands, from the hangman's noose. Outside, everything was being readied for the final culminating event, the hanging of the Jews. Members of royalty invited to the event were seated up front. The Pope also was assigned a front seat. Of all the people there, however, besides the families of the Jews, he was the only one to be depressed. He found no pleasure in the death of his two friends, the ones who had given him these precious gems and who had been loyal to him. But there was nothing he felt he could do. Their fate had been signed and sealed. The spectators could not understand the high spirits of the condemned men and watched in puzzlement as they were being brought up to the platform. They went up the platform, the hangman proceeded to put the nooses around the neck of the two brothers, the tailors. The order was about to be given to drop the trap door when suddenly there was a commotion in the crowd. No one knew who was causing it, but people were being shoved aside right and left. The king called for order. "Who is causing this disturbance?" he cried angrily. "Why can't we go on with the hanging? Who has the temerity to break up such an event?" Someone assumed the role of a spokesman and said, "You know, there's some old Jew here who is forcing his way to the front. Whoever tries to stop him is given such a look by the Jew that he falls back in terror immediately. Look, he's coming closer. Here he is." And the old Jew stepped forward before the king. The king looked at him balefully and said, "What, you have any evidence to produce to save your brethren? What are you doing here? If not, let's go on with the execution." The old Jew was unfazed. "Your Majesty," he said, stepping closer to the king's seat, "I do have evidence which will show the two men being falsely accused. I know who the culprits are, and here is the detailed proof." The old man withdrew an envelope, and within it there appeared drawings of fantastically detailed pictures of some men carrying a corpse and throwing it into the cellar of the tailor's palace. Moreover, each of these men had written under his picture his name, his title, and where he lived. This was so stunning a piece of evidence that the king quickly consulted with his retinue, his ministers, and when they saw something so remarkable and miraculous, they decided to see for themselves whether this was true, and they called out the names of the parties who were involved in this plot and who were attending the hanging of these two unfortunate Jews. These people came forward at the command of the king, and when they saw this astonishing evidence with their names and the pictures, they fell to their knees before the king, and to the amazement of all, they confessed their crimes. The two tailors were immediately released, and these people who had instigated the crime were hung in their place. The tailors ran over to the king and fell to his feet, thanking him for hearing the evidence brought by their countrymen. The king sent them home back to their palace, and later on, the Jews received an official apology for all the anguish that was given them because of the false accusations that was made against them. And with this, the Pope finished reading the random story that he had selected to read before the College of Cardinals. And Rav Zev, the story that was to decide the fate of the entire Jewish people in that area where Rav Zev hailed from, where you will recall that if the story came out that the Jews were innocent, it was a sign that these Jews were innocent as well, and if not, God forbid, their fate was to be sealed. The Pope finished reading from the record, and he said, "We see here the true hand of Providence. Just as this record shows how two brothers were found to be innocent of the charges leveled against them, so too, this is a heavenly message that these other Jews are free of that libel, and I declare that you and your countrymen are innocent of any crime. The College of Cardinals, having agreed to this test, thinking that it would surely turn out the other way, had no other option but to assent and say, yes, we will nullify the decree. And that they did, and with the nullification of the decree in hand, they said, together with the Pope, to Rav Zev, return to your countrymen, tell them that they may continue living in peace and tranquility in their place without any fear. The case is hereby dismissed." Rav Zev thanked them all profusely and with great joy, with an armed escort to protect him along the way, returned to his place, where he immediately went to tell all the people the good news, which spread like wildfire throughout the communities where the terrible decree had been hanging over their heads. And after the time when they celebrated with a Suda Seidoa, a festive meal of thanksgiving, Rav Zev hurried to the Baal Shem Tov, wanting to tell the Baal Shem Tov all about that which had transpired, and that he had successfully concluded the mission of the Baal Shem Tov. As soon as he entered the Baal Shem Tov's presence, the Baal Shem Tov said to him, "Rav Zev, that was an interesting story they read aloud, wasn't it?" Rav Zev, on his part, was not that surprised. He had already figured out that the Baal Shem Tov was aware with his Ruach HaKodesh of the entire course of his adventure. In fact, that the Baal Shem Tov was with him throughout his adventure, had saved him numerous times, and was aware of its happy outcome. And with this, we conclude the tale of the loan.